Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. A new U.S. Supreme Court ruling could mean resentencing for hundreds of people, some in Massachusetts, who've been convicted of violent felonies in federal court. The 7-1 vote involves the case Welch versus the United States. The justices ruled that a decision in a previous case about federal sentencing could apply retroactively to those who've already been sentenced or those whose cases are closed. Former Massachusetts federal judge Nancy Gertner says this ruling shows that the justices are starting to chip away at mandatory minimum sentencing. Gertner is also a senior lecturer at Harvard Law School, and she's WBUR's legal analyst. Welcome.
Nice to be here again.
On the phone with us is someone with a different perspective, Cape and Islands District Attorney Michael O'Keefe. He says this ruling is just a technical one, and it is not a statement from the court about mandatory minimums. Welcome, District Attorney.
Good afternoon.
Also, we want to point out to our listeners, we want to ask you as well, have you or a loved one been affected at all by mandatory minimum sentences or the three strikes law in Massachusetts? Is it time to reevaluate these things? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter at Radio Boston. So, Judge Gertner, I'd like to start with you. This ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court essentially says that a previous ruling can be retroactively applied here. And the previous ruling was about the federal version of the so-called three strikes law, right? So that's where someone with three violent felonies can face longer sentences. So how do you think this latest Supreme Court decision applies overall to mandatory minimum sentencing?
I think that what the court was saying it was in part a technical decision, but it was interesting that it was a 7-1 Supreme Court vote. You can get an additional 5 years for an armed career criminal statute. You get an additional 5 years if you are convicted of three specific felonies, burglary, arson, et cetera. But then there was a residual category, which was essentially any other conduct that involved violence. What the court said was that you can't pivot a five-year sentence, a mandatory sentence, based on an ambiguous phrase like violent felony. So what it's telling legislatures is that we're not going to enforce mandatory minimums unless they are clear. And to that degree, it was an important decision. I think it only affects a certain subcategory of enhanced sentences, because if you have three prior burglaries, it said burglary specifically, you get that extra 5 years. But if it's only a question of involving a crime of violence, that was too vague to lead to those kinds of consequences. What the Supreme Court did today in denying review of a different case has much more significance. This was a case of a 75-year-old war veteran who was growing marijuana in his backyard for medicinal purposes. The Alabama statute said three prior listed convictions. There was no question of ambiguity here. Three prior specifically noted convictions, and you get life. And this 75-year-old disabled veteran got life. And even the Chief Justice, who was the justice, by the way, who had the Ten Commandments fight, said this was an excessive sentence, but I have no choice. There was a challenge to that. The statute was clear. The enhancement was clear. But this challenge was, hey, this is disproportionate. You should not be getting life for a marijuana offense. The Supreme Court has only ruled the death penalty disproportionate, life without parole for juveniles disproportionate. So that what they have turned down today was much more significant. If they had engaged with, you know, which sentences simply go too far, that would have been major. That would have been, and that's what the SJC has in its case in front of it too.
Right, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court. But this, I just want to make sure that I'm clear on this U.S. Supreme Court ruling today. So essentially, what that means is the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, is not taking that up.
Not taking this challenge to a disproportionate life sentence.
Okay. So, Michael O'Keefe, I want to hear from you. What's your perspective about what's happening here, and what kind of message can we take or not take from what we're hearing from the U.S. Supreme Court?
I guess I don't read it as broadly as Judge Gertner or you seem to be suggesting. I think these both cases. cases. And I just read the little blurb on the Alabama case this morning in the newspaper, so I'm not terribly conversant with it, although it was noted that this wasn't a sentence given for marijuana. It was given because of the prior sentences as prior convictions as an enhancement, one of which was an armed robbery. Mm-hmm. So, I think it illustrates that, as the Welsh case does, these cases turn on their, you know, kind of individual fact scenarios. And I don't read a whole lot into it. I look at the Welsh case, a decision that supports the old notion that criminal statutes will be strictly construed against the government, and that's appropriate. And so if there is something that is vague or doesn't give the proper notice, whether it's as to the substantive elements of an offense or to the kind of sentencing a judge can impose, then that's going to be stricken as void for vagueness. And it's interesting that in the last sort of summation by the court, you know, they make the point that had the 11th Circuit decided this on the elements clause of the ACCA instead of the residual clause, which Judge Gertner pointed out, we might have an entirely different outcome. And the case is only remanded to the lower courts to make a further examination of this consistent with this opinion. And they may well go back and say that we find now that this is something we can decide on the elements clause instead of the residual clause.
I see.
And so, that will lead to a different outcome. So I don't read a whole lot into it.
Mm-hmm. So there's no, you don't think that there's a message here at all. You think that this was just a very specific ruling that actually might change because there could be another ruling that would take a different look at the clause and the definition of violent felony here.
You know, it's kind of similar to, you know, to digress for just a moment. We have in Massachusetts recently this medical marijuana legislation has passed, and we have now 25,000 people that have a so-called medical marijuana card. Now, the medical marijuana statute that the, you know, ballot question gave us enumerated any number of conditions, medical conditions from cancer to glaucoma and, you know, a whole host of serious medical conditions that one could apply for a medical marijuana card for. And then it had a residual clause, other. And I would just note that one of the media outlets has examined the 25,000 reasons that medical marijuana cards were given, and 90% are for other. So, you know, it's the difference between the elemental, if you will, clause, mm-hmm, and the residual clause.
But I'm just wondering, perhaps you can disagree whether this really is a message from the court about mandatory minimums, which have come under a lot of scrutiny and, of course, from the White House, right, which has said that this is causing part of our problem of mass incarceration. But I'm also wondering if there's anything here you see about so-called three strikes legislation. District Attorney Keefe, you mentioned the Armed Career Criminal Act, and that is what we're talking about here, that would have given the gentleman in this case a higher sentence, and so what we're looking at here is the definition under that act and whether it's too vague, which the High Court said in this particular case that it was too vague. But in Massachusetts, we passed the three strikes law in 2012, where we said that certain crimes would allow someone to get a longer sentence or an indefinite sentence, really. Judge Gertner, is this ruling, can we take anything here about three strikes laws like the one that was passed in Massachusetts 4 years ago?
Maybe the simplest way to put it is that if you're going to enact a mandatory minimum that increases sentences based on prior convictions, you have to be clear about what those convictions comprise. What the court didn't do is say that in a case in which you're absolutely clear, that somehow the sentence could still be out of proportion to what someone should get. So that's why one case was about you were not clear as to the convictions that would trigger 5 additional years. And in the second case, it was the court unwilling to say life for a drug offense, even for prior convictions that had occurred 20 years before, life was too much. The latter, the court hadn't done, and the district attorney is quite right that if the court had engaged in that kind of analysis, that would put the courts right in the, you know, in the crosshairs of a debate about whether there are limits on legislative power. Mm-hmm. That's really what the mandatory minimum debate is about. Legislatures necessarily generalize. They come up with mandatory minimums that may cover a variety of situations, a variety of records. And we see over and over again, I saw it as a judge, individual cases where you add up the column of figures and you say, wait a minute, this really doesn't make sense. Up until now, American courts have really not engaged in a proportionality analysis. But more and more people are raising those kinds of claims. Those claims would really substantially affect this area.
Mm. And if I might, first of all, I don't disagree with the ruling in the Welsh case. I think it's appropriate to hold fast to the notion that criminal statutes will always be strictly construed against the government. And if we don't spell out with a great deal of certainty to give notice to not only, as I said before, what the elements of the offense are, but what the sentencing parameters are too, then you're going to see a statute that would be drafted like that be struck down as void for vagueness. But on the whole business of minimum mandatory sentencing, I would also respectfully suggest that, you know, there has been a movement around the country, the Arnold Foundation, the Pew Center, a number of entities have gone into various states and made the case for reform of their criminal justice systems because it was argued that their laws and some of the results were draconian. And you know, I'm sure that happened in any number of states, and I don't want to name them, but you know, there are states that we had some fairly draconian laws,
but not Massachusetts.
And I think when the Pew Center, I'm one of the members of the Council of State Governments, which is Pew's baby brother, mm-hmm. and is doing the analysis of the criminal justice system presently in Massachusetts, and I think we're going to see some good recommendations come out of that with respect to trying to decrease recidivism, to increase the post-release supervision that we would hope would keep people from going back into the same sort of situation that they were in that led them to become involved in the court system and in prison in the first place. But, you know, in Massachusetts, the district attorneys undertook a very detailed examination of the population. And I can tell you that as of January of 2014, 13% of the Department of Corrections, roughly 11,000 prisoners, 13% of them, or 1,467 to be precise, were there for a drug offense. And those 1,467 people represented 58,690 arraignments. Huh. So what does that suggest to you? That the individual defendant has 40 plus arraignments on his record. That suggests that we're doing it right in Massachusetts. We're reserving state's prison for the people who deserve and need to be there if we're going to be at all concerned about the public safety. And I'm not so sure that you could have made that same argument in some of those other jurisdictions around the country, where I think the Pew Center and the Arnold Foundation and some of these think tanks that came in
did some good.
Okay,
District Attorney, I just want to give Judge Gertner just a minute to respond here because we're running out of time. Judge Gertner.
Well, draconian is a little bit in the eyes of the beholder. I understand that the federal sentences are over the top. The federal sentences were extraordinary, were really onerous in lots of ways. But when you talk about 40-plus arraignments, you know, one of the things that Ferguson and all of those controversies have suggested is that criminal convictions are often dependent upon the nature of policing in minority neighborhoods. They may be a function of somebody's prior misconduct, but oftentimes they are also a function of who gets stopped, who gets arrested, and who gets sentenced.
Okay. Well, we are out of time, unfortunately. I'm sure we'll be back to this. We've got the State Supreme Judicial Court looking at this as well. Nancy Gertner, former Massachusetts federal judge, senior lecturer at Harvard Law School and WBUR's legal analyst, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Also, Michael O'Keefe, district attorney for the Cape and Islands, thanks to you as well.
You're very welcome, and nice to be on with you, Judge.
You too.
Bye now.
And to read the Supreme Court decision, you can go to our website, radioboston.org. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.